Okay, today is Sunday, May 22nd, 2022. And I say Shavuot Tov to everyone listening and all those that will yet hear the recording in due course. I want to begin this year with something entirely different, nothing to do with our lectures per se, but a lot to do with my life, my Rebbe, my experiences. And I hope people in Lakewood are listening and will make Rabbi Gershon Ribner, R-A-B-R-I-B-N-E-R, aware of what I'm saying. A Talmud Dafka from Hollywood, Florida, sent me a link and asked me for my opinion. This individual evidently is a Rebbe in Lakewood. Again, Lakewood is very big, and I don't know exactly what that means. Maybe a Rosh Chabura, etc. Gave a talk on the schism in the Torah world and why the Rav is not accepted. And he asked a simple question that when it comes to college, we all know that everyone went to college in the 20s into the 30s. Kids were actually thrown out of Torah Vadas for speaking against college, the Malachim, and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rabbi Yitzchak Kuttner, etc., acknowledged it and it didn't fight it. So why is there such opposition to the Rav? And that's his question. The answers he gave have nothing to do with reality. It's shocking. And I'll take that up in a minute. But I just want to give the real and only answer. And the answer is so crystal clear. All these Gedolei Yisrael, and many of them I knew personally, yes, they made their peace with college, but it was a bidiavad, panasah. Whatever reason you want to give. The Rav was a gadol who didn't make peace with college. Encouraged university, felt that in the Western world, one has to go to university. And there was no one like the Rav as far as learning. I don't want to give out grades, but I'll show you in a few minutes. He was heads and shoulders above everyone else. And here you have a giant of giants who encourages university. And this is why there was such opposition to the Rav, and this schism goes on until today. I have lectured on it extensively. I have published hundreds of pages on the topic. Now is not the time to go any further. But Zil Kri Beiravhu, it's axiomatic. Rav Moshe was Rav Moshe, Rav Yaakov was Rav Yaakov, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner was Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, Rav Aaron Cutler was Rav Aaron Cutler, but the Rav was the Rav, and he had a different shita. Just last week, I spoke about the question, was the Rav like a Hirshian? And that question hangs fire. If you're familiar with the second volume that I published on my Rebbe, The Rav, The World Of, there's no question he viewed it as the reality of the Western world. If you study Ish Halacha, there you come away with the feeling that the Rav was more like a Hershey, and it's Miluatar, it's a Kivshuha. In every civilization, we have to tame civilization, tame the world in accordance with human abilities. So this is the answer to the question. There's a tremendous difference between the Rav and Rav Hirsch. And again, I'm not going into detail. You don't have to have Rakefa talk about it. Look into my work on the Rav, second volume, where the Rav himself talks about Ma Beini Levein Rav Simcha Rafal Hirsch. All you can accuse me of is making a mistake in the translation from Yiddish to English. So far, these volumes have been available for on to 25 years. No one has found a mistake in my translations. Rav Hirsch viewed it as a total obligation to integrate Torah and Derech Eretz. His Batei Sefer, the Beit Sefer Reali, his curriculum reads like a Ramaz curriculum. But the Limudei Chol were totally part of the Torah Gestalt. He only allowed from Jews to teach or non-Jews. He didn't want Jews who were Mechallel Shabbos teaching mathematics or chemistry or biology. That was Rav Hirsch. The Rav, on the other hand, loved what he found at Yeshiva and Yeshiva College, was established by, of course, my cousin, Rabbi Dr. Dov Frevel, the first man to turn the spade of Torah in the United States. Everything else that comes to America stands on the shoulders of Rabbi Revel. And he loved the fact that the yeshiva was, in his words, no different than Volozhin, and the university was a real university. And we can discuss it in great detail. I have discussed it. I only wished my lectures were indexed. Now, coming back to Rabbi Ribna, I couldn't believe my ears that the Rav gave shiurim in an academic fashion. This is exactly the opposite. In YU in the 40s into the 50s, when YU was much broader than it is today, because YU too has been affected by the swing to the right, there was an underlying critique of the Rav. And I wish I had some other people alive and kicking from that era to sit with me here. That Rebbe, it's totally brisk. It's totally, your shiurim are no different than Lakewood, or than Rav Aaron. We want a little bit academia, we want a little bit Torah Mad, and the Rav absolutely refused. His shiurim, 1,000%, no different than brisk, foolish, and anyone who sat in the shiur can testify. Now, the greatest proof is Rav Shneur Katla, these ears. I don't have to quote anyone else. These ears heard from Rav Shneur when I learned in Lakewood. When he came back from Rabbi Zalman, my tatat me geschickt zu lernen beim Rabbi Yeshebeah. And he used to, my father sent me to Rabbi Yeshebeah Shehir Shirim, and he, for many months, it may be more than a year, he sat in the Rav Sheyurim uptown in what today is Yeshiva University campus, etc., Washington Heights. So I asked Rav Shneur, I was very close to him, an edle mensch, wonderful, wonderful human being, edle kind, you could see Musa, these Jews we don't have today. And Rav Shneur said to me, "Do you schmuck?" Wow, he said. But as I said, and via the gefind the ruchania, the atmosphere, how did you find the atmosphere, the feeling? He said, "No, my only complaint was the Talmidim weren't dressed properly." And I don't know what he meant by that, but probably by Rabbi Bisa Zalman, like in yeshivas today, they wore a type of a coherent uniform. I need not tell you, in the world of YU, although today there's a lot of uniforms, you never had that in the 40s or the 50s, but there's, you know, difference in style and dress, and looking at me, you know that every week I'm wearing a different shirt and with a different configuration. So that was Rav Shneur's one criticism, but the Sheyurim, if you want another proof, Chidushei Batra, familiar with that? And we're talking now heavyweight. Rabbi Yehuda Maltuski, he published quite a few volumes. It is word by word the Rav Sheyurim. It was taken from notes that were published by YU, mainly Rav Heschel Shechter's notes. He reworked them, and the Rav's Teira, 1,000% yeshiva, Rabbi Reichman Svarim, academic. It never entered the classroom. By the way, my last conversation with the Rav, face to face in 1983, when I went to see him at YU, and I was in America for sure, it was like a week and a half, and I blocked out the final day to be with Rebbe, and we spoke about many topics. One of the topics was his uncle, Rabbi Nachman Karakovsky, the Avodat HaMelech, who blended Volozhin and academia, if you want to call it. And the Rav helped him with Kitvei Yad when the Rav was in Berlin. And we had a wonderful discussion, but it never entered the classroom. The shiur was the shiur. Now, Rabbi Ribner made a comment. There's a picture of the Rav where he's giving a lecture and his feet across. So Rabbi Ribner, you owe the Rav an apology. You should never understand what I'm about to say. Unfortunately, I understand it. That was a lecture at Stern College, a two-hour lecture. It was probably the Tanya Soloveitchik Memorial Lecture, philosophy, The Rav already was well into his 70s. He was not well. He had neurological illnesses. He was already diagnosed. When your feet don't work properly, I can't sit with my feet in the same position too long because my feet will fall apart on me. When I end the shiur, I have to push myself up, holding on to the desk, and I can't walk right away. I have to regain my equilibrium. The Rav was crossing his feet because of physical health problems. In my time in shiur, the Rav stood all the time. Rabbi Twesky, in your time, did the Rav sit or stand? How was it? You'll tell me later. He's muted, so I can't hear. But in my time, the Rav stood. I have to admit, from the day I started teaching at YU, Serious Teaching 62, I sit. Why? Because I had terrible back pains when I stood. So no one has ever seen me stand in the state of Israel since I came in Aliyah in 69. I don't stand, I sit. I don't write on the board on principle, because in the 60s when I taught in YU, when I taught kids who were like 14 to 16, etc., when I wrote on the board, they threw spitballs at me. So Baruch Hashem, I decided instead of to wear a armor against spitballs, just sit and look at the students on Sein Gesund. So the Rav, legs crossed, what does that have to do with giving a shiur in the golden period, the 1940s, the 1950s, the 60s, etc.? Now, as far as the Yahrzeit shiur, I can't believe there was one negative word about the Yahrzeit shiur. Yeah, you have to read the memoir literature of the period. It was the Kodesh Kadoshim of the Torah world in the United States. The crowds that came in, you had from Lakewood, from Chaim Berlin, from Teira Vadas, you name it, Chassidish Yunga Talmidei Chachamim, and the Yahrzeit Shiurim were Matan Torah, Matan HaSinai. Here, I'll just give you a name so you don't have to believe Rakefet. There's a Rabbi Moshe Fuchs. I know he lived in Far Rockaway, maybe he's in Lawrence today. He's involved in Hashgacha and Chinuch and Rabbanut. He's my Talmud. He didn't last long in YU. His father was a Europeisha Talmud Murfak of Baruch Belevovich. And I can tell you, his father used to sit in and he was a survivor, went through the Holocaust, the hell of it, and Baruch Hashem reached America, might have been through Shanghai, I don't know, and was rabbi in the Bronx. And what a fine, able individual. These people were so different, so good. We'll come to it with Rabban Soloveitchik, the difference between frumkeit and ablekeit, ehrlichkeit. And he was sitting in my shiur. I once had an experience that had happened to me a few times. I call it Gilui Eliyahu. Things happen that just, it's above comprehension. And I was telling the class about learning and about Torah, and that it's not academia, it's not biology, it's not chemistry, it's not anything else, it's Torah. And if your heart is not in it, your soul is not in it, you can wind up writing Chidushei Torah on Friday night. And I spoke about what happened in by Baruch Ben, his yeshiva in Kamenetz. One of the biggest Ilum in the yeshivas, they opened the door Friday night. He's writing up for Baruch Torah, the Chidushim. All right, do you know that this young man's father jumped up? How do you know this? He said, I was there in the yeshiva when it happened. I said, I heard about it already from when I learned in Lakewood. I may have heard about it from Rav Nassim Wachtvogel or from the atmosphere in Lakewood. People spoke about it. But wow. So his father, then if a year later he had a different Rebbe and his father was pleased and he switched him, and Rabbi Moshe Fuchs is the person I'm talking about, that's the son, and this was his father, I think the name is Rabbi Yecheskel Fuchs, if I recall correctly. And one time we're at the Yahrzeit shiur and we come out, I'll never forget, the Yahrzeit shiur began at about 8 o'clock in the evening. It was cold weather, but clear. We came out at 12:30. The snow was falling. We didn't know there was snow. We walked to the 36 bus. We're both going back to the Bronx. And on the bus, we embraced each other as father, myself. We said, Matan Torah. It was like being at Har Sinai. And this is someone that heard the Baruch there and heard others. Oh, what a Yotzeit Shir was. Halavai, you should pick up a recording and listen. You have to know Yiddish. I have to admit that in today's generation, Yiddish is a scarce commodity out in the literature world, unfortunately. When I learned in Lakewood, as you know, I was convinced, and I believe it until today, that Moshe Rabbeinu would get up with the Eibishter in Yiddish, the Torah was given in Yiddish. It's a Kenish sein Anderish, as Freddie Zucker insisted when I learned in Lakewood. Now, the other issue, I just want to check my comments here, the other issue that was raised by in this talk in Lakewood about the synagogue council, I've lectured on that extensively. If you present the Rav, explain his point of view, which Reb Chaim Heller held, which Reb Leizer Silva held, it wasn't stam that he was in favor of synagogue council on a certain level. But you have to clarify, and there you look into my work on the Rav, look into the Rav, look into other volumes that have been written. The Rav wrote in Yiddish explaining his point of view in the Magen Journal. And I can only tell you that in the state of Israel, the Agudat Yisrael and the yeshiva world and all that we have here, the Rav's viewpoint has won out. Here we have a Knesset, which is basically no different than synagogue council or a New York Board of Rabbis. And Baruch Hashem, Aguda, Mizrahi, Shas, everyone is in the Knesset, Lekavod Ulatiferet, and they get along, they make a Kiddush, they make a Lechayim together. I couldn't be in the Knesset, I'm a Kanoia, I admit, I'm different than most people, I couldn't do this, there's people I couldn't drink Lechayim to, but some of our leading Agudistim drink the Lechayim very easily. So please, you can't just say the Rav was opposed, you have to explain what his viewpoint was, and the Reb Chaim Heller and the Leizer Silva and others, Zinishke Ben Shikian go, all right? By the way, I'm not in favor of synagogue council. I wasn't then, I'm certainly not now. And I've explained it many times, my conversations with Ram Soloveitchik. But my Rebbe's point of view, that man haven't there at Heretz, and understand it. And in Israel, Rebbe went out. And I can tell you, as far as college and everything we've spoken about in the state of Israel, Rebbe will win out totally for one simple reason. Baruch Hashem, the so-called, what they call Haredim, are going to take over the country. They're 10% of the population, 20%, in a few years they're going to be 35%, 52%. Baruch Hashem, you take over the country. You got to run an army, you got to run an economy, you got to run the internet, you have to, high tech. Baruch Hashem, and it's happening right before our eyes, so Rebbe's point of view is going to conquer Israel on many levels. Okay, Ad Kan, please, I hope someone knows Rabbi Geshen Ribner with all due respect to him. Ribner's a well-known YU family, the president, Richard Joel, the fourth president of Yeshiva University, is married to a Ribner, and it's a well-known family. And you're entitled to your point of view, and Lakewood should live l'kavod u'tiferet, and the more from Lakewood we have here, the better off Torah will be, and Jewish survival will be, and the Ribbono Shel Olam will be much more happy, in my humble opinion. But we have to be intellectually honest. Okay, now, I have to say I'm very happy, and I hope Rabbi Grunstein is listening, because I see I'm not the only one that was upset by Tzohar's ruling in relation to wine, that you can be makshir a company even though Mechallelei Shabbos are producing wine. If you look into Jerusalem Post on the 16th of May, Professor Zivotofsky has a long article, and it's as if he's quoting me word by word, that yes, there's a heter b'dieved, we all know, Reb Kivager and others, that if a Mechallel Shabbos touches the wine, all right, we can be samach, it's tinok shenishpa. But that's a bidyeved. And I hold even further, we as much as we love every Jew, But we have to make clear a Mechalel Shabbos is a Mechalel Shabbos. That's not proper Torah life. A Reform rabbi, I love him as an individual, rabbi who comes study with me. But when a Reform rabbi, all that concerns him is Pesach, is that there should be chametz in the hospitals. Wow. We have to make clear, lo dachtechem derechai v'lo machshevoteichem machshevotai. So, and I have to say, the answer that was given by Tzohar, a few days later they published an answer, I was upset with the answer too, because they found fault with the rabbinate. If you're criticizing us, how come the rabbinate allows waiters to serve wine and they're not makpid the waiter has to be a tzaddik yisrayelim? Yeah, but wine, if I'm giving a heksha, the only wine I'll allow to be served if the waiters are not tzaddikim yisrayelim would be Yayin Mevushal. And you should know, the OU, when it gives a heksher on El Al, I don't know today, but I know a few years ago there was a big scandal with El Al. You all remember that a plane stopped and the pilot, they needed food, they had to have a repair, and he ordered in the non-kosher pizza. So there was a big scandal, and El Al took over the heksher. But with the El Al Heksher, it's not on the wine. The wine is kosher, but they have no guarantee who touched it, who opened it, who's serving it. But I would believe in Yerushalayim, the rabbinate gives a Heksher, I would believe that it's all Yayin Mevushal that's served at the table. If I'm wrong, then the Heksher has to say on the wall, our Heksher is on everything but the wine. The wine, if the bottle is brought to you and you open it, fine. Beyond that, we're not giving a heksha. But if it's Yayin Mevushal, ain't baya. Okay, I hope I've made myself clear. Now, coming back to some of the problems we've dealt with, we mentioned in passing, the Rabbi Menashe Klein mentions in passing the whole question of Geirut and the Syrian community, where they insisted that you cannot go out, you cannot convert, they didn't want intermarriage. So I got a very interesting letter from a Talmud of mine, Dr. Steve Kalanda. You mentioned Rabbi Katzin and the embargo against Geirim by the Sephardic community. My wife grew up amidst the Syrian community on Ocean Parkway in Flatbush. She was very good friends with Esther Katzin, the elder Rabbi Katzin Zazal's daughter. I believe your classmate sister. That's correct, because my classmate was the son of Rabbi Katzin. We got smicha together. Many years ago, her older sister had married a non-Jew for whom Rabbi Katzin sat shiva. Later in life, when she divorced the non-Jew, she was not admitted back to the fold. As an aside, when I had asked a Syrian patient of mine as to why they do not accept Geirim, he told me they do not have any schut avot. I asked him if Moshe Rabbeinu's wife Tzipora would have been accepted by the Syrian community, and all he could do was shrug his shoulders and say, those were different times. So Steve, I thank you for the letter. And again, I'm well aware of this cherem. It's a lifetime cherem. If you intermarry, I heard a story where it was an intermarriage and the guy became a total Shomer Shabbos, but they couldn't be in the Syrian community. They had to go into one of the greater modern Orthodox communities in New Jersey. All right? Should this apply today? Well, the whole reason behind it is if you know you can't convert the lady or the man, you're not going to get involved with dating with non-Jews. It's a wonderful idea, but dealing with reality today, and I have to tell you, the progressive world, or the retrogressive world more correctly, it affects all of us. I'm just in a state of shock, and I've said this, and I hate to be right, but 30 years ago, when the conservative movement started talking about being makarev, the mixed married couples, and I said in class, it's probably recorded, that there's going to come a time within 10, 20 years when the conservative rabbinate will be performing marriages for intermarried couples. Well, if you know what's going on in the conservative movement today, there's a bitter split where people are now performing into marriages, and some of the more traditional conservative rabbis say it's the end of the conservative movement. Everything will be reformed. You see in our world, lesbianism, homosexuality, they're born that way, they can't help themselves, be merciful, have pity. So you wind up a note from a frumshul, 100%, expressing condolences to Mary, who's married to Jane. God have mercy. In Bnei Akiva in England, there's just a big explosion. In their Mazel Tov column, Bnei Akiva expressed Mazel Tov to two lesbians who were getting married, members of Bnei Akiva. Now you can understand why in England they kicked out Chaver Knesset Smotrich, an extremist, etc., etc. The Western world, you looked at the Post last week, was an article by my Talmud, Rabbi Elchanan Pupko, where he spoke, we shouldn't push away already mixed married couples, we should understand the kids may be Jewish, the mother may be Jewish, even if the mother's not Jewish, they want to be Jewish. Well, if someone comes and you see that Lekarevotam, we'll talk about that later today, at Taisvus, it's very important, but to say, push away, if we start being kind and open and say, Baruch Haba, Ribbono Shel Olam, the intermarriage rate in America will go up from 72% to 92% within minutes. But this is the influence of the Avodah Zarah around us. And all of us today, no different from YU to Lakewood, elsewhere, we have to be mechanech Torah Hashem Tamima. We can be open, we can be welcoming, but the heart of our existence is different. We're not like everyone else. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. And we have to know what we can take from the Western world and what must be totally, totally rejected. Okay. Now, regarding the whole question we were dealing with the Orthodox day schools and children who are not Jewish, so a Talmud, and he doesn't want me to mention his name, he said this is a big issue today, I can't believe what I'm reading, but a Talmud wrote to me that you're taking children who are not Jewish, and there was an instance where a kid is getting married who went to day school, and they're checking whether the kid is Jewish, and they say, oh, he went to a day school, he went to a yeshiva. It's no question he has to be Jewish. And you wind up having a kid who's not Jewish being married and being accepted as if he is Jewish. Regarding what we touched upon, Gerim and teaching them Torah, we'll come back to it later today, but there's no doubt in my mind that the prohibition of a Gentile being Oseik B'Torah is when he starts living what to him is the Jewish life. He's creating a new religion. And there we have a problem because people will think, oh, this is a Gentile and he doesn't work on Shabbat and he doesn't eat meat and milk. And we have to make clear that this is not Torah way of life. Nachi Oseik B'Torah. Chayav Mita, we don't want a new schism. We have suffered enough from the Christian schism, to put it mildly. But we'll come back to that later today. Let me pick up where I left off. It's very, very fascinating material. But the Shaila comes, it's Mishnah Halacha, Chelek Yud, Siman Dalid. And the whole question in Chicago, and this was an explosive issue, that the
Siman Reish, I think.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Siman Reish. I'm reading it at Dalit again. Thank you for correcting me, as you corrected me last week. Thank you. Mark Licht corrected me on some points, but he does it after Shia. He doesn't want to correct me in public. It's like Derek Herod's. Just the opposite. If you correct me, at least everyone hears the correction. But if you wait to correct me privately, I have to hope I can reach the same people who were listening a week ago. So Rabbi Dr. Mark Licht correct the Rebbe with zest. We corrected the Rav. We were chutzpenik, but we know you're talking orally, your mind is working, a lulav becomes an etra, Havdalah becomes kiddush, etc., etc. So you're correct. It's beautiful. This is what life is about. And as the Rav would say, you know, his sense of humor, thank you for the correction. Ich hab gewirrt sein, is ich noch wahr, you're still awake? That's what the Rav would say. And I'll admit I made a mistake. My mind crossed currents. Okay, so the Federation built this mikvah, l'kaved l'tiferet. A lot of money went into it. And the Reform and Conservative want to use it for conversion. And the word went out, you'll hear what Rabban Soloveitchik has to say, the word went out, we had an Orthodox conversion, we were converted in an Orthodox mikveh. So this issue was raised. And I have to tell you what becomes very frustrating here, and this has to do with the reality of life. You saw I spent 15 minutes commenting on a, I think it's called the podcast out of Lakewood, the Rabbi Gershon Ribner. We have difference of opinion. And here was very thwarting for those who were upset because Dafka in Chicago, the more right-wing element, supported letting the reforming conservative do what they want. It doesn't affect us, and who cares that they say that in Orthodox conversion, in Orthodox mikveh, lo dubim v'lo yar. And both the Tells crowd, which was very prominent and still is very prominent in Chicago, I'm told, and the Agudat Yisrael, which is prominent all over the United States today, they said, don't make an issue out of it. Let the Federation do what they want. Baruch Hashem, they built the kosher mikveh. And the mikveh is under the supervision of the Chicago rabbinate, Merkaz HaRabbanim, it's called. What's it called in English? CRC.
Merkaz is a different one.
So it's under the supervision of the Merkaz HaRabbanim. And be happy. We didn't have to put up money. It was put up by the Federation, Baruch Hashem. And they supervise. But the mikveh is open to everybody. What it means, supervision, is that there's mem samayim, that it's built properly, the mikveh works properly, everything is in accordance with Yoredeya. But they can't stop people from using the mikveh. And that was the situation, that was the question. So the Merkaz HaRabbanim turned to Rabbi Menashe Klein. And we ended off the class last week with a whole discussion, Lifnei Iver. What does Lifnei Iver mean? Lifnei Iver, I can tell you, when I was a kid in Yeshiva Katana, when you hit the age of 11, 12, two things would happen. One, cigarettes would spread among the students, and two, pornography. And I can remember, it wasn't today. Today, pornography is all over the place. But then you had to go into a tobacco shop or a candy store, and under the counter they had magazines, and one kid would buy it. All right, so tell me. And by the way, this is normal for kids. You can't get hysterical, but you have to raise them to have pride in being a Torah Jew, to understand how to overcome, how to sanctify one's life. And ultimately, they have a much more fabulous physical, temporal life than all these other people in the world with their cigarettes and pornography, etc. Okay, but coming back here, tell me, the kid who bought the cigarettes, is he overlifnei iver? Absolutely not, because you can get cigarettes all over the place. The kid who brought in a pornographic magazine, is he overlifnei iver? Absolutely not. You can buy here, there, the other, today. Forget it. I can tell you stories I saw with my own eyes in the old bus terminal in Tel Aviv. Hashem Yirachem. Okay, today they'll say to me, who needs magazines? It's all on the internet. I assume it is on the internet, I don't know. But there's a lot of good on the internet. So, if they lift Naiva, so who opens the mikveh? And that's where he goes into a pilpul. Is it the person who runs the mikveh, the balan, we would say in modern Hebrew, generates a balanit, the woman? Is he overlift Naiva? But wait a minute, don't the rabbis also have keys? Don't they have to check? Can't they open? And once you have a few people with keys, so there's no lifnei iva. It's already can be gotten here and there. It's not like two, like the Gemara talks about two sides of the river where if you don't pass the grapes over to the Nazir, he'll never get to the grapes. And yeah, you can do here, there, the other way. I don't believe it's lifnei iva.
What about the Rabbanan of Siyata Dvar Avera?
Ah, that's when you took the words out of my mouth. But Mesayayla de Avera is, it's, first of all, it's not an Isha Dioraita. It's more on a rabbinic level, obviously. But Mesayayla de Avera is much more flexible. And it's simply, you're aiding willy-nilly. What you're doing is aiding sin. And that's what I told you when we ended off this year with the problem that haunts us, a car stops us on Shabbos, wants directions. Well, in America, you didn't have a problem. It was generally a non-Jew. But in Israel, it's generally a Jew. You give him that. And that's the machlokes. The Rav said to me clearly, give him exact directions. The less little Shabbos in the world, the better. And I told you, Chabad also goes, I once spoke with a Chabadnik with their parking lots on Shabbos and whatnot, but at least he says a person sits in shul from 9 to 12, he's not being Machalo Shabbos. Rabban Lichtenstein felt he didn't agree with the Rav, Rabban is Rabbarin, and he said to me, but it's Messiah the day of Era, factually you're helping. Okay? So he remains with a question mark. It's certainly not lifnei iva, but Rav Menashe Klein is willing to accept the fact that it may be misayeya l'dei aveira. But now you have a different question. What should you do? What should a Rav do? And this gets us involved, halacha l'maisa. I'm going to show you an unbelievable source. And that's what makes halacha beautiful. Every little topic you could research and do a PhD thesis on. What does a Rav have to do? A Rav, your job is to give musa. If you don't give musa, you're responsible. You're the Rav. You're the spiritual leader. This is the rabbinate. This is Merkas HaRabbanim. This is an organized rabbinate. And they're allowing reforming conservative come, convert their kids, and they convert their wives, their husbands, and they go around boasting it was an Orthodox mikvah. This is a new concept, an Orthodox mikvah. That makes it an Orthodox conversion. And what do? You have to give them musa. Yeah, but you're going to give them musa. Let's talk about a rabbi. Let's talk about the rabbinate. Meir Kahana, in 1960, Reed, Washington, you have the exact the story, the dates, Howard Beach, he put up a machitza Thursday night with kids that were devoted to him. Balabatim came in Friday morning, it's a new shul, the Howard Beach Jewish Center, and they see a machitza. They ripped it down, and they called a meeting, I think it was for Sunday, it was a snow was coming down, but everyone came out, and threw Meir out of the rabbinate. So now the question is, do you give musa when it's going to cost you money? And how much does the rabbinate have to speak out? And here you have the Federation funding the day school, funding Ida Crown, funding schools that are more to the right, obviously. And you're going to give musa, you're going to yell, you're going to shout, you're going to embarrass them? Wait a minute, how far do you have to go? And let's translate this to daily life. How far do you have to go? How come we walk along? I walked along Rehov Azza yesterday. Cars are shooting up on Shabbos. One a minute. No, do you yell? Do you stop? Do you yell? Will it accomplish anything? Do you know, many years ago, maybe 50 years ago, I remember davening Motzei Shabbos, there used to be a minyan outside Ohel Rivka, an earlier minyan than the inside minyan. And a car comes by, and he stops the car, gets out of the car, I thought he was going to rush and smack us. He said, don't stay, ani mechalel shabbat, al tistaklu alai, mi yatem ma'atem, and he was cursing from Jews. It was a sight to see. So how far do you go? Man, you know, the movies, if you recall, Azulai HaShoter, the fabulous scene where they're throwing rocks at the car on Shabbat. You should know, I had a Talmud in the Kovel years ago, whose father was one of those in the movie throwing rocks. They, you know, these were not professional actors, but it was his father throwing rocks, among others, throwing rocks at the car on Shabbat. Okay, so Rav Menashe Klein quotes a fascinating source. I'm quoting Shulchan Aruch Yoredeya, Shin Lamed Dalid. I'm quoting Sif Katan Memchet in the Ramah. I repeat, Yoredeya Shin Lamed Dalid Memchet in the Ramah. And here's the Ramah. Sif Memchet. 48, and here's the Ramah. Apa pisha chayav adam limchot v'yovrei avera, v'chom misha einu moche b'yado limchot nitfas ba'oto avon, mikom akum ein adam chayav lahotzi mamono al zeh. ולכן הכו להקל מלמחות ביובר אבריה אבריה שיש לחוש שיהיו עומדים על גופנו ומעודנו. And wow, look at this halacha, that we should protest. How do you protest? All right, I let off steam, I speak to the microphone. You speak, the rabbi preaches in shul. You know the old joke. They come to the rabbi, they say, Rabbi, we're not pleased with you. You please about Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha. So what should I speak about? They tell him, well, you should talk about Yiddishkeit. some nebulous concept. But imagine if they come to the rabbi, you'll lose money. And this is the reality. You have to understand in the rabbinate how to speak, and even though you're the rabbi, you're the authority, but to lose money, that you're not obligated. So, and the Ramah says, reminded, this is written now with the Ramah, we're talking 600 years ago. The Ramah writes, nowadays, we don't want to get involved in fights and God forbid they can take our money, they can take our health. Look into the times and you see the inside of real life. I remember one time I said something against long hair in the 70s in BMT. Long hair was the moda, how do you say moda in English? I'm forgetting already. It was the norm. The norm, is that a good word? The style, right, the hamoda, and the style. So I remember I once said something against long hair. I remember two kids got hold of me after class. I was afraid they were going to punch me in the nose. And I was careful afterwards, don't say anything against long hair. This is the style today. Try to inspire them. So the Taz says that Kosha Kain Shabadorainu, he says, certainly in our generation, Shinavalim Mavaishim et Hadam al Kacha, Ulafamim Ein Hadam Moshel Barucho, Viavoli De Shvichot Bamim. That a person gets angry, you rebuke them, he'll kill you. He'll kill you on the spot. And that's what I write about in Washington, and it really happened. You know, sometimes I look back at my life and my experiences. That's why I stated before when I spoke about Lakewood and Upshner Cutlass, like a political Russia, these ears. So I can tell you when I was doing my research in Rabbi Revel, you all know this, I said, Washington, it's right there. So I heard that Rabbi Revel was in jail. He was a Bolshevik, he was a Bundist, and he was in jail. So you can't depend upon hearsay.
It's I don't know what it was, but it's different between the Bolshevik and the Bundist.
He was a Bundist. And I wanted to do my research. So I was told that the Yivo Archives in New York, I remember it was a little house at the time, they're much bigger today. At the Yivo Archives, I'll find the Russian Jewish papers from that period. So I come there very innocently to do my research, and I'm sitting there in the library with the ancient papers in front of me. And I found that Enoch Inami, exactly what I suspected. I could even come to the date when he was arrested in Kovno, when he got out of jail. And he quickly left for America to join his half-sisters in America, his relatives. And so a lady is staring at me. I'm a kid in my early 20s at the time. And I saw these people later in communist Russia, a real believer in what she believes in. And she must have been in her 70s, no makeup on it. It was that type. And she's staring at me. And finally she got up and she started screaming at me, "And you made a mishaberach for the Tsar." And you know, I was afraid she was going to hit me. But she saw the kippah, and her hatred for the religious Jew was overwhelming it within her. It boiled over. And yes, Enoch Inami, the Rabbanim went with Shtadlanut, they made a mishaberach for the Tsar, etc. And the same thing, you're going to go over to someone on the street. I mean, I walk home Shabbos and from Mincha, and cars are starting, and you want to yell at them, shout at them, you'll accomplish nothing. So, at worst comes to worst, they'll call the police and they'll arrest you and you'll be fined by some judge. So that's the halacha. I'm not obligated to lose money. So now you come to the whole question of the Federation, that you're worried stiff that you are going to lose money. So perhaps that Ramah should be called up. Perhaps that Ramah is applicable. But see, here too, Reb Menashe Klein says, Natan, there's a big difference. Where you beat someone up, and you're going to be fined, then you're going to have to pay for what you did in the medical cost. There it's money out of your pocket. But here it's not your money, it's the Federation money. And it's a suffix. Maybe they will take away the money. Maybe they won't take away the money. So the rabbi should stand up. How do you allow this? How do you allow Reformed conservative to use the mikveh and people? And he goes into the whole concept of the Amei HaAretz in our time. And I'll quote another Gemara that he quotes, also very, very important Gemara, which plays a big role in the whole controversy around synagogue council. And we'll quote it in a minute, but he's racist. In other words, he says you can look at it either way. Maybe you're right, you're going to lose money. On the other hand, it's not your money. And here we have to understand, why fight? Why create antipathy? Why create antagonism? Shalom al Yisrael. And he quotes the Gemara in Chagiga, Daf Chaf Bet Amid Aleph. And this Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda referred to it in a different style last week, but it's the same concept, Mishum Eva, the Chayesh Le'eva. And you see, this is a concept, basically, among Goyim. We go out of our way to be decent, upright among Goyim. We can give many examples, but the most fine example is, you all know it's an open Gemara, it's an open Halacha. We bury the dead of the Gentiles. We give charity to Gentiles. We feed the poor of the Gentiles. Chabad today, with their great work in the Ukraine and all that they've done, but you know, a certain percentage of the people they're helping are absolutely not Jewish. These are people who learned that Chabad is very good. Can you turn them away? Absolutely not. And the term is Mishum Eva. We do everything we can so that there will not be animosity. With the Gentiles, the only thing we can't do, and this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, many subject there, we can't contribute to Avodah Zarah proper. That's why to do business, to bring them a gift on their holiday, that we're not allowed to do. But anything beyond that Mishum Eva, we bend over backwards. If halachically we can be permitted, we do everything to live with Shalom v'Shalva. Then the question comes up, fine, you bury the dead, you give charity, etc. But then the question comes up, hey, wait a minute, why are we fighting Jews? Mishum Eva. Why are we fighting Reform? Why are we fighting Conservative? Why are we creating animosity? If we go out of our way to be good and decent to non-Jews, so Allah kama v'kama, let's be good and decent to Jews. And here, Reb Menashe Klein quotes an open Gemara, Chagiga daf chaf bet amir aleph, Chagiga 22a. And the Gemara says, Hakol ne'monim al tarat jayin v'shem en kol yamot hashana. Kidei shelo yechei kol echad v'echad holeich uboneh b'mal li'atzmo v'soreif para adumah li'atzmo. Wow, what does this mean? And here, para adumah, anyone coming near the para adumah has to be tahar. Everything has to be tahar. Now when Amaretz comes along, he touched the water, he lifted the kli, they're bringing the water mixed with the eifah. He says, I'm tahar. We believe him. An Amaretz, a boor. What does he know? We believe him. Someone comes along, yayin, shemen. We absolutely believe him. And when he wants to say, this is tahar, this is pure, goyim didn't touch it. The non-Jews didn't touch it. Mechalalei Shabbos didn't touch it. We 100% believe him. Why? Because if we're going to say, you're an Amaretz, you're a boor, you're any Yerechet, you're a Neisfaf, you're a Trumpenik, we're going to call him a Payer, we're going to push him away, he's going to go and build his own religion. Shalo Yechet kol echad v'echad holeichu boneh, boneh la'atzmo. And for Mishum Eva, well, Mishum Eva, why are we so obnoxious, so pedantic? Why do we refuse to accept the camaraderie, Reform, Conservative, use the mikveh, boast all you want, Shalom al Yisrael? And the Gemara goes even further. Look at the Gemara say, Kaman mekablim ha'idah sadutami amaretz. How come today we accept an amaretz? We allow him to give eidot. And why? Because what are you going to do? Push them away? Create a schism? Look into Tosfot. Divrei Hamaskil, Hamatchil, Kaman mekablim saduta. Looking right on that daf, and you'll see that Tosfos explains it's not just Eidot. He quotes the Gemara in Brachot. You get the sources that originally they wouldn't count an Amaretz to a Zimun. He didn't know how to bench. What are you counting him? Nowadays, we count Amaretz. We don't push them away. Mishum Eva. Very important, basic principle. Why are we making such an issue? And here Rav Menashe Klein says, and this is the absolute truth. It is just axiomatic, prize bravo, to our understanding of the contemporary world. Yes, an Amoritz was an Amoritz, but he had no desire to create a new religion. When an Amoritz wanted to learn, we welcomed him. You all know what Rabbi Akiva was. And look what Rabbi Akiva became. Our problem today with Reform and Conservative is they don't want to learn. They don't want to accept. And Amoritz will say, don't put me down. Don't denigrate me. Teach me. And I'll be on your level. I want to accept. I want to be a good Jew. What could I do? I came from a poor family. At the age of 12, I had to stop working. I had no time to go to classes. I had no time to study. Yes, I'm a Maritz, but I want to be a good Jew. Our problem with Reform and Conservative is pluralism, freedom of choice, Reform Judaism, Chametz on Pesach. We are just as good Jews as any Orthodox Jew. This is the problem. And it repeats itself time and again. What's going on today with the women of the wall, you take an example. The women of the wall, do you have your area to daven? No, they want to be at the women's section, at the kotel, in front of everyone, and they want to leave a message. We're as legitimate as any other expression, including the so-called orthodoxy. The Reform movement, they're not happy with this area at the southern wall. They want a big sign up. This way Orthodox, this way Reform. Freedom of choice, pluralism. We're just as Jewish. See, this is the difference. And here, Rabbi Nasha Klein is absolutely correct. Pluralism is not an Amoritz saying, I'm an ignoramus, teach me, and I'll become a much better Jew. Pluralism is saying, Orthodox, conservative, see an article today in today's Post, you won't believe your eyes. Orthodox, conservative, Reform, Reconstructionism, modern Orthodox, Haredim, goes on and on, all Jewish, all beautiful, all good. So you see, the problem comes back again. Once these people are boasting, it was an Orthodox conversion, it's an Orthodox mikveh. Wow. Well, rabbis, protest, say something. Non-Jewish children are coming into the Jewish people, and you willy-nilly are Messiah of the Dei Avera, are helping it, giving it credence. And Rabbi Nasha Klein says, Al achat kama v'kama, and he quotes the Gemara in Yevamot. This is, again, a very important Gemara and a very, very basic Tosfot. Anyone who deals with Geirut, you have to know this Tosfot. It's the Gemara in Yevamot, Daf Kuftet Amid Bet, 109b. And the Gemara quotes a pasuk, Ra Yadua Ki Arab Zav Esone Tokim Botreach. It's from Mishlei that they'll quote the English translation, misfortune after misfortune when he guarantees a stranger. And what does it mean? And look into the Gemara, and one of the interpretations, when he guarantees a stranger, Makablei Geirim, we accept converts. And they quote the Pchelbo, the famous quote, Koshim Geirim Li Yisrael Kisapachat. And let me read the Schottenstein translation. Misfortune after misfortune shall come upon those who accept converts. Converts are as harmful to Israel as, believe it or not, there's no translation, a transliteration, as sapachat on the skin. So I guess we'll have to ask a dermatologist. I'll ask my student, Dr. Ilana Fisher, Liana Fisher, Leona Fisher. I'll ask Dr. Fisher, what is a sapachat in modern terminology? Well, okay, we don't want to accept gerim. We don't want to be happy about gerim. But wait a minute. We do have gerim. We do accept gerim. Wait, didn't I learn a Gemara in Shabbat? Yomo, a basic Gemara. Shammai and Hillel. Remember, the ger comes over. Convert me, Almanat, that I'll be a Kohen Gadol. Convert me that I can learn Kol HaTorah Kula when I stand on one foot, Al Regel Achat. Shammai, push them away. Get out of here, you phonies. And Hillel converted them, and they went on to become Tzaddikei Yesodei Olam. And what's going on here? Are Gerim good? Aren't Gerim good? Should we encourage it? Shouldn't we encourage it? What's going on here? What a Gemara! How do we explain it? What do we accept? What do we push away? And look into Tosfot. And this is the cloud that I've mentioned 1,000 times over. When I spent a year on Gerim many decades ago, and recently, rabbis have to have common sense. The fifth Shulchan Aruch is the most important Shulchan Aruch. One can be a Bucky in Shas and Paiskim, but if we don't have Seichel, it's worthless. And you know, that's from Shulchanan, the kid who came to Shulchanan and did fabulous in the test, and he's getting smicha, and Shulchanan says, and it's Isaiah Fosnik, to be very careful about the fifth Shulchan Aruch. So the kid says, Rebbe, you can't miss the fifth Shulchan Aruch. I know four, I don't know five. The Rosh Chanan says, Seichel Yashar, common sense. So you see, when it comes to Geirut, you have to have a gut feeling. Is this person sincere? And here's where we're coming to Chag HaShavuot, Rut Hamoa V'Yah. I believe that this Shabbat, there are going to be over 100 communities in Israel that are having Shayurim on Ahavat HaGer. And there's no question that if a Rav sees a person is sincere, welcome them with open arms. There's no problem with teaching them Torah. Let them understand what they're getting into. At first you frighten them, but if they say Va'afal Pikein, welcome them with open arms. And I have to tell you, in the state of Israel, you have all over Gerim Tzaddikim in the full sense of the word. And I told you, in my own family, my brother's sister-in-law, a young lady raised in Yerushalayim many years ago, and a German young man came to Israel, and he just couldn't leave. He wanted to atone for the sins of his parents and grandparents. He converted, married this lady. You should see the Torah family they raised. And a girl like that, you have to welcome and love with open arms. And there are many stories like that. It's not the only one. Many stories. Read the papers, read before Shavuot, you'll see in the Alonim and in the general newspapers. I'm talking about Makor Rishon, Yisrael Hayom. Even in Yediyot Maariv, you'll find it as well. In Haaretz, that's a different story. And it's up to the Rabbanim. We have to have Seichel. And so you're caught in a quagmire. What do you do? And Reb Menashe Klein doesn't know how to paskin. Simply, what do? You kick these people out? Do you kick them away? Do you embarrass them? Do you say that all these conversions, we don't want it, we want nothing to do with it? Or are you makar of them? But what do you do with the Reform, the Conservative? What do you do with the mikvah? What do you do with these people boasting that I went to an Orthodox mikvah? It's an Orthodox conversion. Okay. The problem is real. On page, on this tshuva, page Resh Samach Zion, and I hope I'm reading it correctly, just give me a second, excuse me. It's a lot of pollen in the air today. It wasn't an easy Shabbat with the pollen either.
And dust
here from, but I think the windows are closed, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mark closed that window. There was noise before with all that they're doing in the parking lot. Reish Samach Zayin, page Reish Samach Zayin. So here at the end of the tshuva, he says, look, we can go back and forth, we can be mefalpel. I want to come up with a solution, a proposal that I believe will solve the problem. And I have to tell you, you read this proposal, it's absolutely beautiful, but unfortunately it's very naive. The machloket among Torah Jews is frightening at times. You just saw in Lag BaOmer, by day, the breakthrough. Again, the newspapers and the radio all say Haredim. It's not fair to say Haredim. It's a certain element, like the Plag Yerushalmi, like a certain element in Toldot Aharon. They attacked the police, they broke down the fences, they had to close Meron down, period. And you see, even what I quoted an hour ago, a shir giving in Lakewood describing the Rav, you can differ with the Rav 1,000 times over, or a shut mitna, but that description, no basis in reality. I can't, and it hurts me, because now I realize I'm in my 85th year, and there are people sitting there listening, have no idea, they accept the Torah Mishinai. But I lived it, I saw it. Could you imagine, they were mad at the Rav that the class didn't have a level of academia in it. You follow? They wanted something. Why are you? We want something different. In your time, Mark, no one was demonstrating for anything different. The swing to the right took hold of YU2. But if we could ever get along, b'shalom b'shalva. So, what's his proposal? He says as follows, that yes, the mikveh has to be open to everyone. The mikveh was built by the Federation. But the rabbanim who control the mikveh have to establish a Beit Din for Geirut. And in this community, all the Geirut has to be done with the approval of this Beit Din. And for any Geir to go to Mikveh, they have to have an official document from the Beit Din that they are permitted to go to the Mikveh. And this would solve all problems. We're not eliminating Reform and Conservative, but we have a Beit Din LeGeirut that will be established by the Var HaRabbanim, by the Mechaz HaRabbanim, as it was called, and they would follow, obviously, the Halakha, the Var HaShem, and that way every Geirut taking place in this mikveh would be 100% reliable. And what's the reason behind this? You don't want to bash the Reform and Conservative. We're not saying Reform and Conservative are no good. We're saying in order to use the mikveh for conversion, you need the authorization of this special Beit Din for Geirut, which was set up by the Mechaz HaRabbanim under the aegis of the Federation and this beautiful Federation mikveh. All right. One problem he alludes to right away, and this is a problem that haunts us until today. How many of you are students of Torah history? How many of you have studied the history of Torah in the United States? Tell me, was there ever unity. Go back to my lectures 10 years ago. The Agudas HaRabbanim and what's happening, Yeshivas of Yisroel Hanan, the yeshiva in Chicago, by the 1920s, an American rabbinate, the Agudas HaRabbanim made a fateful decision. What? Rakefetz, a graduate of Yeshivas of Yisroel Hanan? What's Kenneth? A nice mouth, an Amaritz, a boor. He can't be a member of the Agudas HaRabbanim. What does he know? Today, Baruch Hashem, I would match my knowledge with many members of the Agudas HaRabbanim of that time. But that's not the point. The point is, I'm a tzaddik. Who are these shikingach to tell me? Who's the Merkaz HaRabbanim? Who are these kids who graduated Hebrew Theological College, today called Skokie? You see, right away there's the problem of unity. You see it here in Israel. You had a Beit Din for Geirut run by the rabbinate. You had private Batei Dinim. Rabbi Nissim Karelitz, the whole Rabbi Nachum Rabinovich, Gedolei Yisrael, but not part of the organized rabbinate. So he senses that problem right away. See, he knows the reality. I'm quoting, Shafilu Yaha Rav HaGadol B'Torah V'Yira. Even if he's the greatest Rav in Torah and Yira, Yikof Atzmo L'HaBeitin. He has to bow to the Beitin. They have the majority. They have the authority, not the majority. They are the ones that will decide. They are the ones who run the mikvah. They are the ones who run the geirut. And there should be no hefkerut. It has to go through this beitin. And he says that this is in accordance with tradition. Throughout the gullus, many times there were special batei dinim that dealt with geirut, and the rabbanim stepped aside. And I can tell you in America, you'll take Reb Moshe Feinstein, Reb Moshe, let me mention my chaver, Rav Salnitzer, the son of Rav Shmuel Salnitzer, Tzvi Salnitzer, he was my age, the Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. And he did Geirut in Queens. And Reb Moshe sent any ger that Reb Moshe said felt was sincere, sent him to Queens, to Rav Salnitzer ben Chsamach. And he did the Geirut. No one else interfered. I had a situation in the OU where they were waiting for me to come during the summer, and they introduced me, and it turned out this person was listening to my Shayurim, and considered me his Rebbe. And he was going with a non-Jewish woman who wanted to convert. And I think she was Korean, if I'm not mistaken. And this Beitin that I said, what's the problem? Contact Rav Shmuel Salnitzer, Rav Tzvi Salnitzer, the son of Rav Shmuel Shmuel was a Talmud Mufak, his father was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbarch Leibovich in Kamenetz, was a Rav in the Bronx in the University Heights area. I remember it like yesterday. And within a few months, she was converted. And Tzvi called me and said, you have no idea, the lady you sent me, a tzaddeket, what's the problem? But he was an expert and he could tell right away where they were going. And by the way, they became very prominent members of an Orthodox shul in Manhattan. Kids who in day school, Baruch Hashem. But you see, you need a rabbinic sense, but you need a formal rabbinic court for Geirut. And everyone has to surrender to their authority. We can't have each one building a bamalatzmo among the rabbinet. Well, this is one part of the problem. The other part of the problem is, are the reforming conservative going to accept this? And you understand, their attitude is, we're also rabbis. We're also learned. We're also knowledgeable. We also have standards and values. Your standards and values have nothing to do with Judaism. It's liberalism, progressivism, Gemilat Chesed, Tzedakah will grant you. But what's that have to do with the heart of Torah? Am levadad yishkona, vein amim lo yitchashem. And they're not going to accept it on either. But he writes here that this is l'shem shemayim. Kol mi sheyetzeh lehitkayeh b'Chicago yifneh lehabeitin hanal. V'yal pihim yiyeh kol rav v'kol negiyah b'yanyanani gerit. Everything is through them. They're the experts. And aliacha shehamekhas harav banim yifasemu habeitin hazeh v'atakana shetiknu letova klal Yisrael. Mishalo yishma lahabeitin heim heim hamotzim atzman meham mikveh. V'lo shesogrim lifneichem hamikveh. You see, he strikes beautifully that it's not that we're locking the mikveh in front of them. No. The mikveh is for everyone. But the gerit has to go through this basin. Well, I can tell you in simple language, hilchata the mashichata. In our reality, to get all the Orthodox Jews to be unified, this is a miracle. It happened once in 1949. Agudat Yisrael and Mizrahi ran a joint ticket for the first election to the Knesset. Nowadays, in 2023, let's say there'll be elections, a joint ticket? You can't even get all the Mizrahi people together. You can't even get all the Agudas people together. Yeah, they would be the Aguda runs a joint ticket because they don't want to come in without the Achuz Chasima. But it's two different worlds there, two different newspapers, maybe even more, three different, four different newspapers. You can't even keep track. Chassidim, the Prushim, the Litayim, ay, Shem Yirachem, and then the Reforming Conservative, the women of the war, what's going on? Chametz on Pesach, I'm a good Jew. Can't force people to keep kosher. How are you going to run a house? Are you going to run an army? Could you imagine in the army, they're going to have two different tables on Pesach. The Chametz table and the Pesach table. Shem Yirachem. Even the Arabs in the army know what the laws of Kashrut are and respect the laws of Kashrut. But one Reform Rabbi Regev with Michal Michaeli, this is what we have in Israel. We have a great challenge, a lot to do, but this is a tshuva, this is Reb Menashe Klein. These are very interesting gemaras. I need not tell you, Mishum Eva, how do you draw the line, how far does it go? Losing money, not rebuking the tars, shvichat damim, and he's not wrong, let me tell you. If not shvichat damim, someone gets hysterical, he can beat you up because you told him not to drive on Shabbos, not to latznia et hamanoah, not to turn on the car on Shabbos. He turned the manoah on at that moment. Who knows how many yisurim d'oraita you're over. What do you do? How do you work it out? Gerim, do we want Gerim? Don't we want Gerim? Sapachat. But Tosfot is very important. That Hillel had a lot of insight. Shammai didn't have the patience. But Hillel had the insight. These Gerim are ignoramuses. They see the Kohen Gadol's beautiful clothes. They stand on one foot. They don't want to spend 50 years studying Torah. But when they converted, they understood Marabu Masecha Hashem, the gauntlet of Torah, the Torah way of life. So, but how do you solve it? And his proposal, he says at the end that if the rabbis don't agree, he takes back the proposal, it's only L'shem Shemayim L'shem Shalom. Okay. Now, this topic becomes a major topic in the life of Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. And a lot of hurt in his life, I would say, as a result of this topic, and as a result of those who didn't oppose it, but favored it and allowed it to be, and and didn't make a protest against reforming conservative conversions were Orthodox, converted in an Orthodox mikveh. Now, I want to refer you to a very interesting publication. It's two volumes. It's called Harav Aaron, Yelad Sha'ashuim. Like, let me hold it up here. Harav Aaron, Yelad Sha'ashuim, Ki Midei Dabri Bozach Skarena Od Al Kain Hamu Me'ai Lo Rachem Rachamenu Ne'um Hashem. And that's Rav Aaron's picture as a youngster. That's Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. That's him as a youngster. A typical Litvish kid, no long payas, no black clothes, just a Litvish kid who will go on to become a Gadol Sheva Gdolim, a Gainim Sheva Gainim. Now, these two volumes are Hebrew and English, and there's no author listed. But I will reveal to you who the author is. It says, copyrighted 2011 by Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik. Now, Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik, my schut to know him, he lives in the Old City. He's a middle son of Rav Aaron. There's Rav Moshe and Rav Eliyahu, I believe, are both older. Rav Yosef and Rav Chaim. Chaim is in Beit Shemesh. Yosef is in the Yatika, and their two sisters as well. One is a Mark, who was married to my dear friend, the Talmud, I believe his first name was Shmuel Marcus. The other one is married to a Rabbi Segel, and they live in America. One lives in Canada, the Marcus family, and the other family lives, I believe, in the Boston area. Now, Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik, he suffered more than anyone because he was a teenager at the time that all happened, and he was still at home, and he saw what his father went through. His father had a lot of Agmas Nefesh in Chicago. I'll say it very briefly. It's not time to do a detailed biography. But Rav Aaron was very unique. He was he was very close to Rav Yitzchak Kuttner. Why was he close to Rav Yitzchak Kuttner? Let's do a little bit of history now. When Rav Moshe Soloveitchik came to America in 1929, Rav Moshe finally got a visa. It's a whole story. It took over a year. The American consul in Warsaw was an anti-Semite, and Rav Moshe had an ingrown toenail operation, which I've had about three during the course of my lifetime. And the anti-Semite said, this is an operation, you can't come, we have to see that you're recovered. So he went through a long procedure till he got the visa. When he got it, he jumped for it, and he left behind his wife and children. They joined him a few months later, and he left Reb Yitzchak Kuttner, who was in Warsaw at the time and very close to Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. They left Reb Yitzchak Kuttner in charge of the young Reb Aaron. And he was bar mitzvah at this time. His father was in America. He was in Warsaw. And Reb Yitzchak Kuttner was the one who acted like the father substitute for the bar mitzvah and had a great impact on the young Aaron. Later, he comes to America, and he goes to MTA, goes to Yeshiva College, and he studies with his father almost from the day he reaches America. He's in his father's shiur. Reb Yosef Soloveitchik's father, Reb Aaron, what can I tell you? He was Bucky in Kolat Torah Kula, Bucky in Rishonim. Tremendous amount of knowledge. He studied law. And it could be that his original thought was he'd make a living out of law and continue learning. How did he make a living out of law? He wrote, when a lawyer appears in court, you have to make a presentation to the judge on previous rulings that deal with this case. The more brilliant your presentation is, the more chance you have of influencing the judge. So they told me that Rabarim used to write briefs for prominent lawyers. And when they appeared, you know, it was Goynes, Rabarim's Goynes. And he could have very well make a living out of that, but he became very close to Rav Huttner. Rav Huttner appointed him to the faculty in Yeshiva Rabbeinu Chaim in Berlin. And when I was growing up, I can tell you that when anyone spoke of Rav Chaim in Berlin, they spoke of Rav Yitzchak Huttner, and everyone else knew Rabban Soloveitchik. Those were the two famous names. There was Rabbi Shel Snow, who was an American who had stayed in Europe, was also a terrific Talmud Chacham, a terrific mensch. And then what happened was the Rav took ill, 1959. I was a Talmud of the Rav already many years, and the Rav needed a very serious operation. And they brought Rav Aaron to the yeshiva to take the Rav's place during those critical months. Now, was it only coming to the yeshiva to take the Rav's place? And I'm telling you my own opinion, and I hope someone here will do a doctorate in Rabban Soloveitchik's life, and you can see if you reach the same conclusion. I think at that time, Rav Huttner, and again, I spent a year in Rav Huttner, it's not for now to repeat those lectures, but Rav Huttner was going, traveling from Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook to Satmar. He went through a long story in his life, from his thinking, his hashkafah, his outlook, his influence. Also, he was becoming very centered in the sense of more of a, not just a Rosh Yeshiva, but an Admur of Chaim Berlin. As Willy Helmreich wrote, I quoted it, I believe, I trust I quoted it, or unless I quoted it, I'm quoted it in my writings. I'm sorry, I didn't quote it in class. I quoted what I'm writing now. no other yeshiva in America was so identified with a single personality as Chaim Berlin with Rav Huttner. And at that time, Rabbi Snow left, I'll use that word as a euphemism, Chaim Berlin, anyone who had a bit of a following, and Rabban Soloveitchik evidently felt very uncomfortable. And he went to YU, on one hand, to take over the Rav Shir, which he did, I was a Talmud of Rabban at that time, and he remained in YU. He didn't go back to Chaim Berlin. Now, Rabban is in the prime of life, And by the mid-60s, he has that feeling, let me do something big. And in YU, he was one of a number of great Rashi Yeshiva. In Chicago, there was a chance to build something magnificent. They were having problems in Chicago, Rav Chaim Zimmerman and Professor Eliezer Berkowitz and the famous Purim story, you know what I'm talking about, with the dish flying in the air. I don't know. Rav Chaim Zimmerman was speaking. He was the Rosh Yeshiva, and he was a little high. It was Purim. And he said, even my friend, my colleague, the big apikiris, Professor Eliezer Berkowitz, will agree with me. And Professor Berkowitz threw a dish at him. And then the board of directors met, and they fired Reb Chaim Zimmerman. And that's where Rabban Soloveitchik comes to Chicago. So on one hand, here he comes to a place that really had no major Torah personality. And there was a chance he could really build a tremendous structure. What Rabbanan didn't realize or didn't know was that there were Balabatim in Chicago that had a mind of their own. And it was not like New York, where the Rav and of Shmuel Belkin ruled, period, exclamation point. Balabatim gave money to the yeshiva, but they didn't interfere with the yeshiva. And there was an incident with a Mizrahi building, and I told you this, in an area of Chicago that was changing, and they sold it out, I think, to a Buddhist temple or something. And Rabban was furious. You can't sell a Mizrahi building with a shul in it, evidently, and it should become something that borders on idolatrous worship. And the Balabhatam told the Baran, the Dala counts, and we decide, not the Rabbanim. So Rabbanim did not have a happy stay, and ultimately he has to leave Hebrew Theological College. He organizes Yeshiva Bris, which was a prominent yeshiva in Chicago for many years. And sitting here is Rabbi Dr. Mark Wiener, who at one point administered the yeshiva. And that's the story of Rabbi Aaron in Chicago. This episode was a lot of atmos nefesh for Rabbi Aaron. And I'm going to quote Rabbi Aaron word by word next week. And we'll see what he felt, what he held. And there's a famous thought of Rabbi Aaron that comes about because of this episode, Frum and Ehrlich. We'll see what Rabbi Aaron has to say. And I have to tell you, the older I get, the more I'm entranced with Rabbi Aaron's thought. The older I get, I see, wow, is he correct? That he hit the nail on the head. But okay, and this volume, it's Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik, who's a gaon in his own right, in my humble opinion, he's the equal to any child of Rabbi Aaron. He's a gaon adir, but he has spent a good portion of his life trying to reclaim that the atmos nefesh that his father suffered, he would like to undo, he would like to nullify. And my heart goes out to Reb Yosef Halevi. I can actually tell you, he has a comic script that's done professionally. I have it in my office. It's done by Talmidim of his, who are professional people with comic scripts. It's second to none. And the comic script describes the atmos nefesh that his father had to endure in Chicago. So Be'ezrat Hashem, next week we pick up again. And a good part of this year will be dedicated to Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik. I have to tell you, when I speak of Rabbi Aaron, I shiver, I shake. I knew him intimately. I was zeicher to know Gedolei Yisrael. I knew Rabbi Aaron Cutler more intimately than most of them. I was a youngster at the time. I knew Rabbi Moshe Feinstein. I knew the Rav. I knew Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik intimately. And you don't know what you're dealing with. You're dealing with Kedusha, Vitara, and Lamda Nut, and Mitlaib. I don't know how to say that in English. Mitlaib, compassion, understanding. A very, very unique individual. And I consider it a schut that I can talk about him in front of the erudite audience in front of me, both on the screen and in the classroom, and all those that will hear the shiur later on YUTorah.org. So to reiterate, what did we do today? Well, we finished that with Menashe Klein's approach. And you see, there's very little you can do to reach a black and white answer. Panim lakan, v'panim lakan. And halachically, you can make a case either way. But one problem remains, and we'll see the statistics next week. Thousands of Gerim say we were converted properly. The mikveh was Orthodox. And from an Amoritz point of view, just try to think that they understand it that way, that if the mikveh was an Orthodox mikveh, then the Orthodox world has to accept us. And how do you get Rabbanim to agree to sit together, not to harm each other, not to tear down fences, not to demonstrate, cause people like Ms. Nefesh, the Peleg Yerushalmi? It's beyond my comprehension. I hold that my whole life is Kula Torah. There's nothing I believe in outside of Torah. And my whole life I give to Torah. It's hard for me to understand how Torah Jews can cause such harm. It's beyond my personal comprehension. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, it's a sheer second to none. We pick up Agudat Yisrael, Knesiyah Gedolah, 1954. And by the way, Rabbi Aaron Cutler was at that Knesiyah Gedolah. We pick it up, Rabbi Lazer Silver was there. Oh, it was right after the Holocaust, the Gates of Mavet, the first time they got together. We pick up exactly where we left off. Now I want to ask the wonderful Talmidim in front of me, are there any questions? Yomo, that I have a right to dictate a letter to you last week saying that that was incorrect. What do you want out of me? I should hear my Rebbe, academia, in the classroom. Like, my legs are crossed right now, so I should be able to stand up in one piece. Okay. Have confidence in the Rebbe. I still miss the candy that was thrown away. Chametz? What chametz? But I sold the chametz anyway, l'chumra. And the few cookies I left myself for breakfast after making a siyum. I was tired. Oh my gosh, what a world we live in, that they're choshek b'ksherim by people whose entire life has been a song of praise for God and Torah, for my Rebbeim, for Reb Chenoch Fishman, Walton Avenue in the Bronx. Check with Rabbi Moshe Fuchs what his father had to say about the Rav's Yahrzeit Shaver. Moshe, whenever I meet Reb Moshe, he reminds me of the snow. What was on? We didn't even know there was snow. We're on the bus. We were Maimer HaSinai. We just came off the mountain. You have to experience. You can't even believe. You can't even stop to understand. Read my work on the Rav. Read the first volume where I quote Memoir Literature. Read what else has been written subsequently. As my generation, unfortunately, moves on. The witnesses, we need to hold on to them, belay the nefesh. Until we meet again in health and happiness tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Das Vidanya. Mark, open it to the world. It's open. Are there any questions? Yitzchak, did you get the Yud Gimel Karm? Were you able to download it? Rabbi Rubin, can
you? Not yet.
But will you be able to?
I hope so.
I mean, if you don't have the equipment, I have it and I have it for you. But if you have it, you can do it in a second. The Yud Gimel Karm.
If you could do it, it'd be better.
I should, okay, I'll drop it up off your house one day this week. I just
now, the solution of Menashe Klein is really naive. He doesn't really give a solution, because it's like the rabbi who said, I succeeded in my talk of stock because the poor are ready to accept. But the Jews of Chicago, run by laymen, you know, American life is run by laymen. The Federation is not going to allow an Orthodox faith in to curtail what the Reform and the Conservative have done. So there's no solution.
Yeah, so Yitzhak, your quote, I introduced them by saying naive. I used that very word. I agree with you wholeheartedly. But what one thing we have to admit, Rabbi Menashe Klein's heart was in the right place. Okay? That much we have to admit. But all right, it's Hilchata de Meshichata. That's what I said a few minutes ago. But I agree with you 1,000%. All right, is there anyone else that has a comment to make? Okay, I'm looking. Okay. Now, I want to remind everyone, next Sunday, there's no Shir, it's Yom Yerushalayim, but 3:30 in the afternoon, there will be a special Shayur on Yom Yerushalayim and the 50th anniversary of the 71 and 72 class of BMT. It's generating excitement. There's a high percentage of Olim from that era. And I hope in America we'll get a nice amount of people listening at 8:30 in the morning. And we give them a little hell that they chose to remain in America. But if their children are living here, we'll remove the hell and stand up for them and salute the people in heaven, Alei Adamah. The children are here and helping us build the Gan Eden in a temporal reality fashion. Thank you for honoring me with your presence until we meet again in health and happiness. Das Vidanya.